Daft About Craft, the Craft Beer Podcast.
Welcome to Daft About Craft, the Craft Beer Podcast. It's episode 57. We're back again. It's me, Dave D.
And me, Dave B.
Sound a bit tired there, Dave.
Well, off there, you've heard about all my life admin stresses that are going on, and they're not all Bob related. It's not actually, it's kind of indirectly Bob's fault, but turns out moving house or trying to move house and all the associated dramas that go with that are not fun.
Life admin is what it is, which means that you will be ready for a beer or two or three.
Yes.
And we've got some, we hope, some really good beers to drink on this episode.
Yes.
Tell everybody about your interview, because this is one that you lined up.
So I think it just goes to show a lot where we are with the podcast now, because when we started, we had to go find people. That was, you know, as you would expect. Mm. And we've talked about it a little bit of late, that now it feels like people want to come to us, which was brilliant. And we were always happy to have people. Well, I was in the Swan at Stratford St. Mary, which has had glowing praise from me very recently since it reopened, with some friends. One of them said, oh, do you know Gareth? No, who's Gareth? Oh, he lives in the village. He's a brewer. Okay, so show me his website. Gruff Brewery.
I bet your eyes lit up at this point. Ooh.
And I sort of thought, crikey, okay, what's this? And, well, first of all, not only that, he's already got a festival booked, you know. Thought, this is brilliant. Got in touch with Gareth, who couldn't have been nice. He's so small at the moment that the beers aren't available for sale to the public, but you can get them on cask in the local, and I do mean the local area, for now, as he will explain. But he did very kindly came and dropped off some beers to, Katie took delivery of them while I was at work. Managed to get some up to Dave, more or less intact. One didn't survive the transit. And we had a really great time talking to him, didn't we? And he,
yeah, he's fascinating.
This is the ground of ground floors, isn't it? We're in the basement with him at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's just right up our street, isn't it? Down at the start of a brewery's journey, and it's lovely to get in so early, and then we can watch how the progress happens over the months ahead. So that will be fascinating.
Yeah, no, it was really good. And as you will find out later on, it was really good from my point of view, much to, well,
Yeah. You'll find out what we're talking about later. It's all to do with the lucky guests. You'll see later. We've got lots of actually breweries that are new to us on this one, because Hyper Tripe is Hyper Tripe with a bit of a difference this time, because we're focusing on a brewery rather than a beer. And there's a lot of hype around this brewery in certain areas at the moment. I don't know whether you've heard of them. They're called Dark Elements. They're from South Wales. And their beers are getting rave reviews and appearing in bottle shops all over the country. So what we've got a couple of beers each from Dark Elements. And we'll be trying those to see if they live up to the hype. We've also got Sam from Copper Beach Brewing Company, the Brewer's Wife. Now, those of you who listened to our last episode might remember we mentioned some big news. Well, we can announce what it is. Go on, Dave, tell everybody what our big news... Well, it's big for us. Hopefully it is for the listeners as well.
So through the history of the podcast, we have had previous sponsors. We are still sponsored by Andy at Hops at Home,
yep,
which we'll very much continue. We're very grateful to what he has done and continues to do for the podcast. But last few weeks, we have started to work with Tapdoor. They want to shine a light, just like us, on small breweries. It's not going to be your big hitters on there. They've got a couple for sure.
Yep, indeed. So when you hear us talking about beers from little breweries, maybe they haven't got their own web shop. That doesn't matter, because you can then get the beer through Tapdoor. Yeah, so we're really pleased to have this new link with Tapdoor. It's very exciting. Our sort of philosophies are really aligned, and they think how we think. So it's a great collab, and we're really looking forward to working together and shining a light even more on these smaller breweries and making it possible for you to easily get hold of beers that we talk about on the episodes that you might not have been able to find otherwise. Now, we're going to kick off the podcast as we usually do with Brew to Me, and this is where we have a beer from a brewery we haven't tried before. And this is a great example of where Tapdoor come into play, because you'll then be able to go and get the beers we talk about through their website. Dave, what have you got for us this time? Where are you heading to?
I'm down to Devon. So this brewery is Many Hands Brew Co. You will hear from Tom, who is the man behind Many Hands, about how it's all come about. And Many Hands kindly sent us both three beers each, and he was very keen for me to try the stout. It's a milk stout, which is interesting. It feels like we're getting a lot of milk stouts coming around at the moment, doesn't it?
Well, funny enough, I've also got a stout.
You haven't.
I have. Yes. And yeah, mine is somewhat stronger than yours. Well, we'll talk about mine when we get to it. But yeah, so we've both got stouts.
Mm.
Yeah, I do love a milk stout. They're not a go-to for you, are they, I don't think?
They're not a go-to for me, but I suppose I wouldn't have probably had that many milk stouts of late. And as I say, it feels like it's a style which is getting a bit more love. So, you know, look what happened to table beers and session pails and things like that. So this is Shadow Puppets. And as Tom describes it a bit more, so I won't go into it too much, but he says rolling in coffee and caramel flavours on the back. Now, also, this beer was packaged on February the 22nd.
So to put that into perspective, that's literally a few days ago.
By the time this episode comes out, that beer will be 13 days old.
Wow, awesome.
And obviously I'm having it before then. So this is as fresh as fresh gets. What's a nice nose? I can smell a bit of there is lactose in it. I can smell a bit of that. I can smell.
I was going to say, is it I presume there is lactose in there.
There is lactose in there. I can smell a bit of the coffee, but it's not super powerful. Okay, I think the caramel is going to come through a little bit more, possibly just as it warms up a little bit as well while I drink it. The coffee's on the back. Not super bitter. It coats a bit like a... I want to say sort of when you have a coffee when you're out, you know, if you have the cappuccino or something and it's got that, you know, that rim around the edge of the cup, it tastes a bit like that in a good way. I don't mind that.
Mm. And it's only 4.5%. Does it taste like that?
Yeah, it probably does, you know. I think it's by no means watery, but I know it's not super heavy in ABV. It's not thick, but I wouldn't expect it to be.
You wouldn't want that to be like that anyway, would you? You don't want a 10% milk stout.
Some people do, but I'd pass on it, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I'm enjoying this. Tom himself says he thinks a stout is for all seasons. We are having this in the winter, and I think it lends itself to that. But I know plenty of people who like to have dark beers all the way through the year, I myself included. So, yeah, Tom can tell us a bit more, not only about this beer, but about Many Hands Brew Co.
Hi, this is Tom from Many Hands Brew Co. We are a little nano brewery based in Dunkerswell in East Devon. We originally started out as a side project from Vigo Limited, which anybody in the industry will know is a equipment supplier. So that means that even though we are a tiny little brewery, we brew on a 200-litre Braumeister system. We've got some really nice kit, and I've got some really fantastic guys that I can call on for help and advice from Vigo when we need it. So the brewery, as I say, originally started as a side project way back, I believe, in about 2017. And I took it over in November 2022 and have rejuvenated the business into, you know, a full-time job and a fully operational brewery. I pretty much started again from the ground up. I scrapped everything, all new recipes, all new branding, and just wanted to sort of build something really special with the small units that we've got. So we are based in two little shipping containers. It's a bit of a squeeze in here, but you know, it gets the job done. I sort of wanted to start again from the ground up to sort of rebuild the brand, get the name back out there, and just to sort of re-establish what we do. So I designed a core range of four beers. Those are Sock Puppets Pale Ale. That's a New England Pale, 4.8%. And we hop that one with Laurel and Azaka. So that's our sort of soft, sessionable pale. Goes down an absolute storm. Then at the other end, we've got Thumb Wall, which is a West Coast IPA, 6%. That's a Mosaic Chinook Eldorado. Super hoppy, you know, nice, bitter, piney, resiny, you know, sort of what you'd expect from a Westie. Then we brew a 5.5% Kolsch, which we've named Dunkers, to give a little nod to our home here in Dunkerswell. So that's a 5.5% Kolsch that we hop with Hull Melon. So it's got a really nice sort of watermelon and banana kind of vibe. So it's sort of, you know, closest we get to making a lager because, you know, because we're so small, tank space is limited. So it's a good way for us to get out something for the lager drinkers that, you know, doesn't need oodles of time sat in the tank holding up space. And then finally, we've got Shadow Puppets, which is a 4.5% milk stout, which is what I believe the guys are going to have a taste of and tell you about. So with that one, it basically, we didn't want to sort of reinvent the wheel with the stout. We didn't want to go crazy with silly adjuncts and, you know, double figure ABVs. We wanted just to have a really strong, nice, smooth, malty, caramel, toffee kind of stout that you can just enjoy all year round. So we brew it all year as a core range beer. I mean, you know, because I don't think that stouts are really just something for the darker winter cold months. You know, I think it's something that should be enjoyed all year round. So, you know, we keep that one going all year. Yeah, it was a reworking of one of the original recipes from when they first started the place here in 2017. So I thought, you know, I wanted to take something that they were already doing and just sort of elevate it, sort of taking, you know, my experience as a craft brewer, injecting it with a bit more life and just making it, you know, something really special. So it's, yeah, something we're really proud of. You can find out more about us on our website. That's manyhandsbrew.com and on all the usual socials, and that's at manyhandsbrew. Yeah, keep an eye out for us and, yeah, keep supporting small independent breweries. Thanks for having me on your podcast. Enjoy the beers.
Well, that's very interesting from Tom. So they've actually been going quite a long time, and he's come into their journey much more recently, 2022, I think he said there. Interesting. So this was in a bottle, wasn't it, rather than a can?
Yeah, all three 30ml bottles. I'll show you the bottle art.
They're almost a tiny bit Omnipollo-esque.
Thank you. I knew it was someone. Yeah, I agree.
I think it is.
Yeah, it's a little bit. It's the swirly nature of the patterns, I think, make me think Omnipollo. Yeah, great shout.
And also quite a few Omnipollos also come in three 30ml bottles as well, don't they?
They do, so good company to be keeping.
Yeah, definitely. Sounds like a hit.
Yeah, no, nice beer. Absolutely no complaints. Look forward to trying the other ones for sure.
Me too, me too.
It seems like Tom's got sort of big plans of what he wants to do, so no, I'll just have another little go now. It's warmed up slightly.
It is interesting, isn't it, how we love breweries we don't know much about, but you've really got to go digging for them to find them a lot of the time. They don't, you know, social media is great, but they don't leap out at you. You've got to dig around into the sort of bowels of the of social media to find them sometimes.
I think so, and I think it says a lot. If you live in the local area, sure, you know about it, and you probably tell your friends when they come down or things like that. But as we keep finding, like, if you can build it in the area and people will come, that can be sufficient.
Although it is amazing, you know, I hear a lot of breweries say, you know, even the people nearby to the brewery don't know who we are, don't know much about us. It's hard, isn't it, to get your name and your message out there sometimes.
I'm very happy to get the name of Many Hands Brew Co. out there, because this is a solid hit for me.
Excellent. Well, I'm also on the Stout Trail. Do you remember the Topic Bar?
I do remember. I think you can... Oh, wait, is this one of the ones that has been discontinued?
I don't think you can get a Topic anymore.
Ugh.
It used to be in the red wrapper with the sort of...
Yes, it was a nut.
Yeah.
Sort of a nut. It was a nut the eye.
You used to get them in, oh God, sounds so old, in selection boxes at Christmas back in the 80s. So you probably weren't born then, Dave, were you?
I was born, but the nut was in the O, not the I.
Ah, right, okay. It got sort of white swirly writing, hadn't it? The Topic was written in white. That's how I remember it.
Yes, that's it.
Well, anyway, the beer I've got is a Topic-inspired stout. A Topic-inspired pastry stout at 7%.
So it's worth saying, obviously, that the Topic as a bar, the big thing for a Topic was it had hazelnut. So yes, this should be what you're getting.
Well, this is from Cold Town Beer in Edinburgh. I went to Edinburgh in January and I did quite a deep dive on breweries in the area. I never managed to come across Cold Town. I found them subsequently. So it just goes to show you can easily miss breweries, can't you? But yes, the word nutty is in big letters on the front of the can. Topic Thunder, nutty chocolate pastry stout, 7%. So we're expecting all the nuts here. Now, this had been in the fridge. I took it out about an hour ago or something to warm up a little bit. Yeah, that's nice. I feel as though it needs to warm up a bit more. It's quite sweet, but it's not that...
Boying.
It's not that sweetness that we've experienced with some of the breweries.
Well, I don't mind naming names. It's not vocation sweet, I assume.
No, not at all, no. That's good. That's nice.
Do you get hazelnut?
Let me go in again. Hold on. Chocolate is the first one that hits you. Yes, it's there towards that back end of it. That's very nice, actually. With a lot of these stouts, they're sort of... coffee tones can take over, can't they? And they can dominate. And it's not doing that at all. It's really well balanced. That's nice.
It's an interesting beer for you to sort of start with for Cold Town as like their first one. So what else do they do?
It's also an interesting beer to start the podcast with, actually.
It is, yeah. So they've got a dipper. There's a New England IPA. There's a lager.
Yeah, anyway, let's pass over to Chris. He'll tell you a little bit more about this beer and about Cold Town.
Hi, this is Chris from Cold Town Beer. We're a small brewery in the East End of Edinburgh in Cannon Mills. Been going since 2019. The beer you have in your hand is Topic Thunder. It's our first pastry stout, which I'm very, very excited about. Made with hazelnut, caramel, chocolate, wee bit of nugget. Was supposed to taste like a Topic, if you remember those. Apparently people don't, which makes me feel very old indeed. Yeah, part of a seasonal indies only range that we've just recently launched. And we've got some really exciting stuff coming up on that. A big 9% deep end tank. Right now, a few collabs on the go, so hopefully we can get those to you guys as well. Enjoy. Let me know if you've got any questions. I hope you like them. Take a wee half and pour it over some ice cream for a wee affogato. Aye, it's a good time. Cheers.
So, as you heard from Chris there, this beer is actually part of their seasonal indies only range. So they've got a core range, as more and more breweries seem to have these days. Then they do these one-off specials like this. And yeah, that's really good. I'm impressed. Interestingly there, he said at the end, pour a little bit over some ice cream.
And I can imagine, yes.
And I think that would be superb. So I'm going to keep a bit to one side. And when we finish this, I'm going to go and see if I can find some ice cream. But I think that would be really good. Another two great breweries we're trying for the first time. Big thumbs up for Cold Town and also Many Hands. And also, the great news is you can get hold of their beers through tapdoor.com.
Hello, this is Ollie from Tapdoor, the craft beer marketplace that's all about discovering amazing breweries and their beer. We're really excited to be partnering up with Dave D and Dave B to bring you all of the amazing beers that feature in each episode. So, as you're listening in, you can now drink along. Hop along to tapdoor.com/daftaboutcraft. And on there, you'll see all of the beers and the breweries that the guys are discussing in each episode. And they're available to purchase and enjoy. Look out for the links in the show notes for special Daft About Craft collections and promos. And here's to discovering an amazing world of craft beer. We look forward to seeing you all soon. Cheers. Bye now.
Daft About Craft.
We now get to the portion of the podcast where we have our guest. And as we found over the course of doing this podcast, you can find your guest in any time, any place. And I found him Swan at Stratford St. Mary. We happened to be there with friends, and one of the friends said, "Oh, brewer in the village now." I said, "Oh, really? Okay, who's that?" Show me the website of Gruff Brew. I said, "Okay, well," did the only logical thing that I could, got in touch with Gareth from Gruff, and I'm delighted to say that he joins us now.
Hi guys, I'm good. A bit chilly, but yeah, great to meet you at last.
You too. Well, you've got a nice porter to warm you up anyway, so you should be all right.
Oh yeah, that's doing the trick already.
Well, I think it's fair to say we love to speak to really small breweries, and you fit that mould exactly, more so than any other. I had a quick look on Untappd, and I think you've had 50-odd check-ins, so we're right at the start of your journey, which is really exciting for us.
Yep, I'm as small as they come. I've got a very tiny piece of kit that I'm using at the moment. Hopefully, if this weekend goes well, I can upgrade to a 200 litre system that I've got there. And I've spent my head scratching a lot of time over this piece. But yeah, almost there. Much to the wife's disgust/approval now and again that I'm converting the shed in the garden into a little microbrewery. But yeah, it's going well. Yeah, you said about the Untappd reviews. A lot of those were from beer festivals that I've been to last year. And that's been going great guns.
Before we get to the beers, what we usually find out is, how has this started? What made you suddenly decide that you wanted to start brewing?
How has it happened?
Who knows? Who knows? Always liked beer, which is always a good start. Spent many, many a childhood summer sitting in Southwold drinking the Adams Ales. And then probably about 16, 17 years ago, started the homebrew journey. Started on the usual process of buying the malt extract kits and realizing they were okay, but that's about it. And then went, okay, let's try this all grain stuff. We've got a lovely little homebrew shop in Colchester Homebrew. Went round to see him and looked at purchasing the kit. And I said, well, you know, I'm not really sure how to use it. He goes, well, I'll tell you what. He goes, when the shop shuts, we'll do a brew together on the kit, and then we'll split the output of alcohol. And hopefully you'll buy the kit off me. And that relationship, as he always joked, I'm his oldest customer, which I have to keep corrective and saying, I'm not your oldest customer. I'm the longest serving customer. And it's gone from there, really. And he supported me along the journey through the good times and the bad times. And just had a couple of recent bad times, actually, on the brewing. And it just sort of went on from there. And then the world of the grain fathers and everything else. And as I was just showing you, you guys converting my garage into a mini pub and putting a kegerator in, et cetera, it sort of just rocketed forwards. And my last 30 years career was in the city, doing various IT and change for various large organizations. And I was about to turn 50 and thought, why not? Why not give this a go? Why not just do something totally different? And then it started. And then the plethora of hoops, et cetera, you have to go through, going approving applications, et cetera. But luckily, I found some great people to support me on those. And it just rocketed through from there.
When are we talking in terms of what year this was you actually sort of started doing the brewing in earnest?
Commercial brewing, I got my AWRS last April. So my first beer was in a pub, the Bromley Cross Community Pub, in May last year. And that was the first time I had a Graff Brewery Amber Ale on tap. Got some lovely photos of me pouring a pint.
What was that like as an experience in watching your beer being poured in a pub with actual real paying customers drinking it? That must have been nerve-wracking.
It was. I just couldn't stop. To be honest, I couldn't stop smiling and getting all the feedback. And again, some people go, oh, it's not for me. I mean, that's fine. Then someone else goes, well, I'm on my sixth pint already, so that's going well. Actually, just going into that pub and seeing someone walk in, look at the pump clips and go, oh, yeah, I'll have a pint of the Graff Amber, please. And just hearing that, and it still doesn't get old. Any pub I'm in where my beer's there and I hear that, it just gives that nice warm feeling and a little chuckle. And I'm normally then pointed out in the bar and they say, oh, that guy over there brewed the beer, go and have a chat with him.
So how much of your life now is it beer related? Has it taken over your life? Or what stage are you at this point?
Yeah, I've stopped the day job and this is my life. This is it. In between a little bit of golf, to be honest. Just dedicated my time to this and seeing how it's going. I'm taking my time. I'm feeling it through. I said I've not worked in this industry before, so this is all new to me. But I must admit, the network out there of breweries and pubs that show support and help is absolutely amazing. There's some great breweries where I've gone down and jobbed for the day just to see what it's like at a scale that I couldn't comprehend in my location. That's been excellent.
We often find that there's this sense of community. I'm interested when you say that for where you and I are in the sort of Essex-Suffolk border, because there's not as many breweries, are there? So where did you sort of go and find the people who were able to sort of show you a bit more and help out?
Yeah, you're right. Other than the big boys, just mutual friend, you know, the guy who runs Shalford Brewery out near Braintree, which is my old stomping ground. So I spent a day with Nigel there. And then you've got Harwich Brewery, which they're now called Wharf, which is Whitton, Harwich and Red Fox, which are based in Coggeshall. Again, been down, seen Paul and the guys down there, spent the day brewing with Fez, their brewer. I told him I was there to work, not just to watch. So he got me involved in everything. And it was really good. And constant connection with them, any questions, any issues, if I need anything, I pop round there. So, and they then open up the forums and groups that are available for brewers. So they put you forward and then, you know, you get an intro into these different arenas and then more people come out, things like suppliers, etc., going from a homebrew scale to the commercial scale. You're sort of trying to run the numbers, working it, how's it work in a homebrew price point? And then you realize actually there's a different market out there once you go register as a brewery, and they introduce you to good vendors. I mean, that's been really appropriate for the beer fest that we'll talk about later, and some of the glassware I've just ordered.
Sounds to me like you've well and truly caught the bug.
I have for years, and it is amazing. The alarm goes off at 6. I'll have a cup of tea, and at 6:15 I'm in the shed brewing. It's more than just a shed, by the way.
just for clarification, how big is it?
20 foot by 8 foot. It's hardy planked, insulated, got a floor drain in,
nice.
Full electrics. Right. And I've just had a dedicated electric supply go in for the new 200 litre kit. Well, it's a secondhand kit I got from the Three Wise Monkeys in Colchester September last year. Came up on Facebook and I was sitting there with my wife and I went, blimey, look at this. And she was off for the week and we were meant to go out that day. And I said, oh, I know the guy. I'm sitting there and I messaged him and I said, look, can I come and see you? This was Tuesday. I said, can I come and see you Thursday? He goes, okay. He goes, but I'm just getting interest all over, so I don't know if it's going to be there or not. And my wife just looked at me and went, just go now, will you? So 8:30 Tuesday morning, I was knocking on the door of a pub, brew pub, to let me in, purchase the stuff and picked it up in the weekend. I said, I've got some great friends in various industries. So one of them's a guy who does a lot of flooring for me. Dez, he's got a big van. So we pulled up and grabbed that, got it home. And it was last, I think it was October, where we were getting the brew shed up and running and putting dedicated floor drains in, etc. And all my mates just piled up and we had a day of building this brewery, all the services to this brewery, and a couple of beers and a barbecue.
I'll tell you what, when you've got drainage in a brewery that's in a shed, we know you mean business, because a lot of brewers don't even have drainage in, you know, bigger units, let alone the shed.
Right, exactly. I said, I'm in what we call, so Gareth Francis. So this is referred to as the Francis Arms, my garage conversion. And I was brewing in here, sort of going between the arcade machine, the pool table and all my beers. And yeah, I was making a bit of a mess. And that's when you realise a floor drain is amazing.
Yeah.
Just chuck it on the floor and away it goes.
Game changer, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's saved my back and probably taken an hour off my brew day as well.
So how often are you brewing at this stage then?
Probably twice a week at the moment. I can only say that I'm only producing 60, 70 litres per brew. So it's very inefficient. So I used to do process optimization as a day job. So I know how inefficient it is. But when I move to the 200 litre kit, that's obviously going to be a big saving. But I'm looking at two times a week at the moment. Had a bit of a hiccup just before Christmas. My mum had a bit of a fall. So I've been looking for her. So brewing was put on hold for a month while I was caring for her. But we're back up and running. And the phone hasn't stopped ringing. It's amazing. I got an email from a place in Beccles, so mm-hmm. which is probably 40 odd miles from here, asking if he can have my beers. It has been absolutely amazing.
The breweries that you've mentioned, Shelfleet, Wharf, formerly Harwich, and they would probably fall more in the traditional than the craft sense. But I think, judging by what we're going to be trying in a bit, you're going to be straddling a bit. But what are you sort of, as a brewer, how would you sort of define yourself? What sort of beers are you looking to put out?
It's always that what is craft and what is traditional line, isn't it? Which is always
we find increasingly is blurry now. The guests we had on our previous episode, Axel Jack, very much do both and do them well. There's no reason why you can't say one isn't the other anymore, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And you go to the beer fest and you try all these various beers and you go, well, from that brewery, that hits the craft mold. For me, I've dabbled with everything and anything I can relative to the kit I've got. I really wanted to start brewing the beers of how I remembered them 20 years ago. So the traditional beers 20 years ago, which to me had a little bit more punch, a little bit more push. I've done a few sort of blind challenges with some friends in pubs and got a few beers off the taps, off of the casks, and said, right, can you name the beers? And you find they'll blur into one. So to me, is to try and push just a little bit on the cask, just to make it stand out a bit. Not try and take it too far, but actually you could name that beer if you had that again. Mm-hmm. On the craft journey, I'm playing constantly with hopping techniques, etc. at the moment, and trying the different products in the market, which is quite interesting to see what works with me. And again, my kit, the hardware, I've tried pressure fermenting at a small scale, etc. And this is something I can't do at the moment at the sort of scale I'm going to, but it may be an option to come up. But again, I've tried some beers that you would call craft that are brewed in a traditional manner, but can just bring those flavours forward. And I really like those as well.
I think more so, it's almost about, you sort of touched on it there, it's almost about the flavours you can get out of the beer these days. To enjoy a beer, we want it to have a nice bit of punchy flavour, and whether it's traditional or modern beer, modern takes, we don't really care as long as it's nice. And I've got to say, I've been a bit cheeky, I've already opened your beer here. First of all, I really like it, it's very nice. Tell us about what I'm drinking, it's the Leff.
The L.
Yeah, the L. So we should just actually say to our listeners that we've got unmarked bottles here with just a letter on the top. And then you were kind enough to tell us what the letters correlate to on an email. So it's all very sort of a cloak and dagger, this is, but we love all this sort of stuff.
As I said, I only have a wholesale license and a personal license, so I'm not selling direct to the public, which is why those were gifted to you, just in case HMRC are listening. The L, in simplistic terms for my friends, I'll call it my Leff A clone. So just I'm trying to look at that style, and again, as you go down the journey, you start opening up all these different yeasts and the flavors and everything they can bring with that and those styles. And I just wanted to try and brew something like that, so I looked at a few recipes, tried a couple, pushed it a bit. I must admit, the one you've got there is my friend called it Leff A light. So I lowered the ABV a bit just to see how the balance would go. So that's probably coming in at about 4.8, that one. And that was another, I said, I'm on the test brews and sort of seeing how they play in the market. When I say the market, I mean everyone who lives within 100 metres of my house who turns up all the time.
Do you get a lot of that? People knocking on your door saying, what have you got that I can try?
Yeah, so my wife will come home and there'll be crates of empties left out the front as well to be filled up. So it's absolutely hilarious. You will see people walking around the village carrying beer bottles. Yeah, so that was my Leffe style, kind of Leffe Blonde, and just trying to see how that yeast works and how it brings out a different flavour. And just again, I'm new to this, so professional brewers may hear this and go, well, it's obvious, but I'm learning. learning and I'm just trying it and going, ah, that goes with that. This, yeah, I like that, but I may want to push a bit more on the malt, push a bit more on the hop, etc., or even balance the ABV a bit more. So yeah, that's been a firm favourite. And I had one of the first times I brewed that, I had it on tap in the Francis Arms with my kegerator, and we were going to the Chapel Beer Festival for my 50th. So that'd been September, year before last. A guy came over from Belgium, friend of ours, and joined us for the day, and we all met in the Francis Arms for a first beer, and he thoroughly enjoyed the levee. And as we came back from the beer fest, we came in and had two more pints. So yeah, that was quite interesting.
I'll tell you what, it's been a while since I drank levee. I think really at the start of my beer journey, I used to drink it quite a bit. I remember liking it, and then you sort of move on to other stuff. So to go back to it, it's a real blast from the past, and it does remind me of the original, you know, the similarities that are really there.
Yeah, you get the earthiness and the sweetness that goes with it as well.
Lovely, lovely bit of sweetness, yeah.
So yeah, I'm very proud of that. I've got an Erdinger style beer.
Yeah.
And I mentioned earlier, we've had a couple of failings and I've just had to tip two brews of that away with the dreaded TCP that came in towards the end of fermentation. And again, a learning curve. I'm now finding out that this time of year and where we are and the floods and everything else, the water board are putting a lot more chlorine and chloramine down the pipes, and with the phenols that come off from those yeast to create the Bavarian wheat yeast that I was using, that then interacts. And so more investigation, more guidance from brewers and suppliers about how to remove that. So again, another lesson learned.
It sounds to me like you really enjoy the learning curve. Mm-hmm. And you're learning something different from each brew.
Yeah, exactly. I had, when I first sort of went on this professional journey, I had a call with Murphy and Sons, so they give consultation, etc., and you send your water off to get sampled and all that jazz. We had a talk, and I was getting asked where do I want to go to, etc., and there was always the thing that the home brewer can brew a great beer, and then they said, but can you, I said, brew it consistently? Yes, I can. I said, my spreadsheets can tell you every single grain of every single gram of every single piece that's going, and I can track everything and profiles and everything else. So, and they were quite impressed. So that part to me comes easy. That's the bit I could easily do. It's just then learning actually what is the outcome of those calculation of what you brew.
Sounds like you've got that attention to detail we often talk about on the podcast, Dave, with brewers.
We often find if there's the analytical stroke, methodical stroke, scientific approach to things, you won't go far wrong because it is a science. You can have a go at brewing a beer, and like you say, you could brew it once and it'd be amazing, but if you then don't log it and don't work out how you made it, chances are you're not that interested in it. The people who are really interested in it are the ones who made it and go, how did I make that really good? I want to make that exactly the same next time, so it's really good again.
Yeah, exactly. And the Erdinger one's a perfect example. I went through every brewing note and couldn't work out what was going on. Upgraded my cleaning in the fermenters in case there was any issues in there. And then you realise actually it's the water, and actually being pointed out, you can actually smell more chlorine in the water at the moment anyway.
So is the intention to get your beer out further and further afield, or do you want to stay local? What's the long-term game plan?
First things first, I need to get this bigger kit up and running to meet the demand I've got. I was walking into the Colchester Beer Fest a couple of weeks ago when I had a phone call from a pub in Harwich asking for a cask of my porter because all the camera members had test bottles of it and they wanted it on tap in there. So yeah, it's sort of demand's going out and the brand's going out, which is really lovely to hear. I sat down with head office last week and I said, if I'm going to do this, now's the time to do this. In my head, I'm looking for anywhere that I could set up at a larger scale. It's the balance between running it as a full-time job and trying to drive it. You can understand the commerciality around it.
Absolutely.
And you know, I say to people, you know, this is not a hobby. I'm taking it deadly serious, but it's a hobby job, if that makes sense. But I'm not belittling what I do here. If I end up working 6 days a week, we'll have to see how it goes. But saying that, there's a phrase that all my friends for the years have said, or you're going to go full Gareth on this, and next thing you know, we'll have 10 people working for you and everything else.
So you've got a track record of doing this, taking the things really seriously then.
Which again, we find is the way to be a successful brewer and brewery. It is life. It's tunnel vision. That seems to be the ways to success that we've sort of found interviewing people over the years.
It's a step change from what I used to do, and I'm enjoying being active as well. So it's just sort of part of my lifestyle change.
I've got to ask, because Dave's obviously enjoying his left light. I've opened VL, which is a very different beer, and you said it's a bit of a Marmite beer. There's some different hops going on. I can't help but think this is going to be stronger than I think it is. It feels like it could be quite dangerous.
It measured in at 5.2. I see, and I think this is the Simcoe hops weighing on it.
Sadly, you stole my thunder there, because I was very confident.
Sorry.
I was very confident. It's easy to say now as an aftertime, but I was very confidently going to say, I think you've got a heavy hit of Simcoe going on in this.
Yeah.
We believe.
Can you name the other hop?
So it's only two. Okay.
So the cogs were in there, can't you? Thinking, yeah. What could it be?
It's going to be wrong, but I'm going to say Nelson Sovan.
Bot on. Oh, he shoots his scores.
Blimey. I'm not having this. This is ridiculous.
I'll retire now.
That's impressive. It was always going to happen one of these days, Dave, wasn't it?
It was. So, okay, well, so Nelson Sovan and Simcoe, that's an interesting combination. That's bitter and quite grapey. I really like it. People like West Coast IPAs, which I don't particularly, they'd probably quite enjoy this, but it's not a West Coast, is it?
No.
But it's got some characteristics so you could get involved in it, but it's not that. It's just...
How would you describe it then?
It's difficult to describe. I can see why you've said it's a beer that would cause some division. If I had a few pints of that on cask, that'd be upside down territory. That tastes strong, I think. It's a very punchy beer, isn't it?
I was working at the Redoubt Beer Festival last year in Harwich, and I can't remember what brewery, but they had a Nelson Sauvon cask ale on, and it was stunning, and it really turned me onto that hop. They'd done a great job of it. I think that was the one that where I actually tapped the cask, it exploded and covered me as well. So I think I had that hop aroma with me all day, to much amusement of everyone at the beer festival. And I thought, let's sort of try and push something different. I went to the hop locker, making it sound all cool and funky, the bucket of hops that I've got lying around, and I went, yeah, I've used Simcoe, but more sort of balancing with a bit of Amarillo and everything else. I know those two play. Let's just try and something that I wouldn't necessarily say matched.
It's a refreshing change of pace, actually.
So has this beer made it out into pubs around and about then or not? Or it hasn't gone that far?
No. And it was just me putting my crazy experimental hat on and just going for it. It's called Villa, because I've got two daughters, Victoria and Lawrence, of V-I-L-A. And I just started to name a beer after them. I'm going through this when you're starting to come up with some names. And yeah, it was a pure experiment. I might change the yeast up a little bit on that, to be honest. I think I used the fake Norwegian farmhouse yeast. I don't know. I think it's got some legs. I think it needs a bit of refinement on that. It's amazing. Some people's palates will go, yeah, this is just almost a medicinal taste to them, when other people go, can I have 6 pints of it, please?
I think I'd be somewhere in between. It's not medicinal at all.
I've just opened the bottle. There's no medicinal notes to it at all for me either.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You mentioned earlier the guys you had on your last podcast, and Axel Jack, and you were talking about how you go into a pub and it's, you know, five versions of a Citra or a Mosaic. And yeah, I can make those. You know, there are some great ones there, but it's when they all merge into one. And as I said at the beginning, when you drink a beer and it just doesn't jump out at you.
Often, if you go out for a few beers, the next day when you think back about what you've been drinking, more and more it's harder and harder to remember each individual drink, because they just merge into one. That's one of the few good things about Untappd, because if you've checked them in, at least you can go back and have a look, because you can't actually remember, because they all tasted so similar. This certainly stands out from the crowd.
It does, doesn't it? You could have a night, as you say, you can have a night where you can have 5 pints of quite bright yellow hazy beers, and there's nothing wrong with that, because if that's what you want to have, I will happily do that from time to time. They all taste nice, but as you say, pick one out of a lineup. You'll pick the first one out because you were sober when you had it, and then you'll forget what the other ones were like. If this got thrown in the mix at any point in that, I'd remember it.
Which is that point I'm trying to do, is that, you know, I'll say that 10 to 20% just push a little bit, just so not ruining the beer. It was a couple of months ago, and I was in a pub and I was drinking, you know, like a nice golden cask ale. And again, I had 4 or 5 different ones and I just drank them, and they were nice. Did any hop, did any malt, did any flavour really jump out? I mean, no, it didn't. And again, there were lovely beers, and I was on a great evening. We were chatting away and sloshing a few pints, but that was it. And I just, you know, where was that kick? We'll need something to balance out the, you know, the higher pushed beers to sort of just cleanse the palate. But they just all felt like palate cleansers.
And now, you might not yet be putting the beer out to the public in can or bottle, but you are going to be putting the beer out to the people in the shape of a beer festival, which is an incredible effort, in June. So talk us through what will be happening at the inaugural Grufffest.
You know, we talked earlier about the people drinking your beer, and it was September last year when I had all three of my main beers, my amber, my gold and my porter, at Chapel, and we all turned up. A minibus from the village went, we all had our Gruff Brewery t-shirts on. I got head brewer, everyone laughs. Okay, there's only one person. I said, yeah, I'm still the head brewer. And my wife had brewer's wife on hers, and the amount of people are tapping us on the shoulder and going, my wife go, yeah, he's over there, that's the one you want to talk to. You know, there were these sort of 25 people in Gruff Brewery t-shirts and polo shirts walking around. And it was nice to hear that enjoyment. And I was watching the beer festival, and in Stratford Mary, you know, like a lot of places, we have some pub closures, you know, the overhang of COVID. I thought, why not do a beer festival? We've got the Village Hall. You know, it's not a huge festival. I'm ticket and only, and it is a limited run of tickets because it's not massive and we are not on the train line or anything else. And yeah, so I'll have beers from Wharf Brewery, Watson's Brewery in Culture, which is a single beer brewer like myself.
Very good brewer as well.
Doing me a nice dark beer. Might have one from Mighty Oak. We'll have some cider, Prosecco. I've got a food truck. I've got music. And I just sat there. I opened up a spreadsheet, worked it all out. And I thought, why not?
I'm just sort of thinking, you know, where you're describing it with the food trucks and all this sort of thing. At some point further down the line, have you got a tap room in your mind where you would bring in these sort of things?
Yeah, again, it's going to be relative to the premises,
yeah,
and where I end up. But I think that would be a logical piece, you know, a good Friday and Saturday night or afternoon opening. We've got Nethergate Brewery not too far from here. I know they do that. You know, they have a few trucks turning up as well.
They're very much an example of build it and they will come. I sort of always go past it. Sometimes I go in, sometimes I don't. But if you go on a weekend, that place is heaving. And it's testament because it's on the edge of the village as well. So if you want to go, you've got to have a little walk or a drive there.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, Grufffest was about that. And it was also, sounding cheesy, it was a bit of a thanks for everyone who's helped me on this journey. I mean, I'm coming under the tendering camera, and those guys have been outstanding supporting me, said the Bromley Cross Community Pub. So, you know, they're getting a minibus from Harwich coming down. I think there's a bus from Clacton coming down as well. So that's great support.
So are there still some tickets left for Grufffest then?
Yep. As I said, it's 8th of June. I think I've sold about half the tickets. The only marketing has just been Facebook at the moment. Branded glasses have been ordered, so they'll be turning up as well. So as I said, as you can see, I like a bit of merch.
Absolutely. Who doesn't?
That's just all good. It's all good fun. We'll see how it goes. And then, you know, start planning Grufffest for the following year, and we can probably have a think about scale and size.
So we touched earlier on the fact that we've managed to get hold of your beers because you were kind enough to send us some as a gift. The general public can't, they're in bottle form at the moment. So what's the sort of timeline you've got for these sort of things to start happening?
I think that, again, would be relative to the premises, being truthful. I think where I am at the moment at home and meeting the appropriate legislations and health and safeties, et cetera, and all those things that go there. I briefly looked at it and then I just decided that's too much of a headache for where I am at the moment. So, yeah, I'm just really focused on going into pubs and going that way. There's this group called Fog, Friends of Gruff.
Nice.
they'll get an email going, right, I've got this, guys, I've brewed this. I'm going to be doing a doorstep drop. I'm the alcoholic milkman. Give me your reviews. I've still got the bit of paper from a lovely chap, Nigel, lives around the corner. It was my first handwritten review of my beer, and I've still got that bit of paper, and I'm going to put it in a little frame.
I've just thought, we haven't actually asked you where the name Gruff comes from. Why is it Gruff Brewery?
Yes, my name's Gareth. I'm from Braintree, and when I was a wee lad, I used to play baseball when the Americans were at Weathersfield, and somehow at that point, Gareth ended up just becoming Gruff.
I wondered if this was going to be the reason. I suspect it might be, yeah.
And so, you know, my longest friends call me Gruff, and my baseball shirts had Gruff written on the back, and we were sitting there last year trying to think of what we're going to call the brewery, and you're going Stratford St Mary. Okay, that's a bit of a mouthful. And my wife said, what about Gruff? She goes, all the people I know call you Gruff.
Yeah, it's a good name. I like it.
And we always talk about the porter. It's called P2. And on a Friday night, normally about 5:30, people have been knocking down the door of the Francis Arms asking me for a pint of P2. And it's called P2 because in early development, I brewed three different versions and they were labeled P1, P2, P3. And I handed them all out to people I trusted to give me their reviews. And the unanimous vote was P2. So the porter is called P2.
P2. So does P1 and P3 never exist anymore? Are they done? Are they consigned to the...
They're dead to me. Yeah.
So we've talked a bit about some of the beers you've made and the styles of beers. What else do you want to make? What can you see yourself wanting to make further down the line?
Money would be good at some point.
We should tell you now that largely doesn't happen in this industry. So...
Come
and tell us the story because we'd love to know.
Yeah, that'll be the golden egg, wouldn't it, that one. I brewed a Belgian Double a year ago and there's a couple of bottles left. And a friend in my village, I saw him last night in the Swan actually. And he goes, oh, I had your Double. He goes, what percentage was that? I said, oh, it was about 7.2. He goes, very nice. So, yeah, so I do enjoy the Belgian style.
I can see Dave.
I'm interested in that. And also, are you sort of planning anything special for Grufffest?
I can nail my Erdinger style wheat beer. I'm going to have that on keg.
If you get that right and you get a sunny day,
I'm going to wheel up my three-tap kegerator, put that in the village hall, and have it on there. So that's the plan for that. To be honest, it's more about not refining and not perfecting, but just maintaining consistency of what I've been brewing. I've got an American pale ale, and we talked earlier about being called Gruff. There's one of the American guys who I'm still close with, Paul Lawless, and nicknamed PP, and I played bass with him for years. And my American pale ale is actually just going to be rebranded as Lawless.
Nice.
So, which I think comes as quite a good name. So I've just been designing the logo with the Gruff goat and then a flag.
Well, look, we've enjoyed both of the beers we've had today. It's quite an intriguing story, this is, because we've never spoken to somebody this early on in their beer journey. It's going to be really fascinating to see what's going to happen in the months and years to come. So have you got in your mind where you want to be at certain points in the future? I bet you've got it all mapped out on a spreadsheet somewhere, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. It's on a post-it note stuck somewhere and everything else like that. I've just been setting short-term goals. I'm definitely going into my work mode now. Get this new brew kit up and running. Get Gruff Fest done. A couple of pubs have offered me some tap takeovers so I can put, you know, all three beers on.
Nice.
And do a night in there. You know, the interest is out there. It's amazing how all of a sudden you get contacted by various people in the industry and even people inquiring about your brand at a very early stage. So, yeah, it's quite exciting. So this year is consolidate and do the things I'm stretching. I've set my stretch goals already of doing the beer festival, getting into the pubs that are after my beers. And then in parallel to that, I'm probably looking at, as I said, the premises view and everything else. And that will be a tipping point to where it will go next.
With the premises, are you looking village or town?
It's amazing the breweries I've visited and there is a mix of crisp, clean, and then there's a mix of old and used. And to be honest, crisp and clean comes at a premium.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to know where I'm at and what I'm doing. So yeah, it's sort of as I said, I've got some great friends who will support any building required within said property, as long as there's a beer and a barbecue at the end of it and a game of pool. That's why I'm sort of loosely looking at the moment. This year is a sort of follow the market. There'll be some places that there'll be some decent, I say the term barn, but you know, something like that can be skinned inside and turned into a brewery.
If you make it the place where they're going to spend that night and it's not a case of, well, if we go here, we'll go here, we'll start here and then we'll go somewhere else. If this is your destination, then it will work.
You said there about making them welcoming. Some places become too transactional.
Mm. Yeah.
And actually, it's that thing that there's a guy I've been following on YouTube, Andy of Four Priests.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been watching him. Great. He's got one of my stickers. So if you watched a couple of episodes ago, he's got a Gruff Brewery sticker.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Now. Yeah, it's been great to see him go through that journey and the premises he's got and everything else. Now he's thinking about a tap room, then he's upgraded, then he's upgrading again. And I'd probably put him a year or so ahead of me on where I want to be. And actually, he's creating a little template. No, he's a great guy. And it's been lovely to watch. And he's one of these guys where you watch a YouTube video and you do feel like you actually know the guy.
Yes.
So we were talking about people who are friendly and engaging and loving what they do. And, you know, that guy does that.
I think when you go somewhere and you walk in, I tend to know within a couple of minutes whether I like the place, whether I like the vibe of the place, speak to people behind the bar, and you just know whether you feel comfortable there. And if you can create a space like that, that is so important. Mm. People will come back again and again.
Yeah, exactly. And it's if you put your revenue driving activities in front of your hospitality activities, that's probably the way I'd put it. But ironically, if you get the hospitality right, the financials
look after themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Organic growth is where you're at, and you're just going to let it go as it goes and just gain momentum along your way. That's how it seems.
Yeah, I think, you know, if I was given a 10-barrel brew system tomorrow, I'd be standing there scratching my head and going, okay, what goes into what? There's options out there, and I'm just sort of keeping abreast of it. I was actually on the SIBA website just before I came onto this, looking at what was available, etc., and nudging the wife and going, oh, right, what about that? Then it brings in these silly things. It brings in challenges like, I'd probably need to change my car because I'm delivering casks of beer everywhere, and my BMW run flat, so I don't enjoy casks of beer getting lugged around, especially with the joyful roads that we've got.
Yeah, I can imagine, yeah.
So I decided to go out and test drive one of the new Ford Ranger Raptors, and my wife's going, hold on a minute, I thought you were a commercial vehicle. This is like a rocket that goes... I mean, well, it's got to balance out. So, you know, all those things. And that's a change of my personal lifestyle as well. And
yes,
you know, how I'd need to adjust that. Mm. I know that I don't really sound pretentious, but you do. That's another stage of committing, going, right, well, actually, my vehicle's a commercial vehicle now.
There's all these things that probably when you set out in the first stages of a brewery, you don't think about them. But as time goes on, you think, oh, yeah, I can't put half a dozen casks in the back of the car because that's not going to work very well. And all these other little things like that.
Yeah, so all those ancillaries are coming along and I'm sitting there with my spreadsheets costing everything out. Okay, if I do this and I do that, and it's just making those decisions on, A, where I want to go and also those impacts on my personal life as well. Am I happy to do that?
Yeah.
And, you know, the answer is always a positive. You know, we both are, and again, big shout out to my wife for supporting me wholeheartedly on this. And, you know, I'm giving up the rat race and I'm just going to try and brew beer and see how it goes. And she went, yeah, do it.
So many people will hear that and think, God, that's a great position. You've worked hard and now you can do what you really love. Do you think you'll still, this is a horrible question, do you think you'll still love this in 5 years' time or think, oh God, what have I done?
I'm hoping so. What was interesting going from that home brew, I'm brewing because I've got some spare time and I'll use this to keep me occupied in an activity and produce beer, to all of a sudden, right, it's yesterday I was brewing, it was lashing down, I was in and out of the brew shed and I was absolutely drenched and it was a job.
Yeah.
But I still enjoy it. As I said, I've had 30 years of corporate life and I love having Planet Rock on in the background and singing to my heart's content and brewing beer. And I'm enjoying that. I'm enjoying that freedom of mind and knowing that this effort, someone's going to drink it and hopefully like it and go, do you know what? That was a nice pint.
Essentially, you're doing things on your terms. You're doing something you love on your own terms, as and when you want to do it.
Exactly. And as I said, it's interesting. Sort of, as I said earlier, you know, straight up and straight off brewing. And then by the time I've finished, walked the dog, grabbed a bit of food, I better shower off the hops that are in my hair and everything else. It's 5 o'clock and the wife comes home and I'm just sitting down going, oh, do you know, I haven't stopped for 11 hours and I absolutely loved it.
What a superb chat. You just can't help but want Gruff Brewery to succeed. Thanks so much to Gareth and we wish you every success for the future. Right, Dave, have you had any interest in beer since our last episode?
Just about. You can tell the person who has a small child, the person whose children are grown.
I'm glad they are. Yeah, you'll pick up the pace again one day, Dave. But as long as you've got at least one beer to talk about on this section, this is Tried and Tested, our favourite beer since we last spoke to you.
So yes, I do. And funnily enough, this beer's been sat in the fridge for a little while. I know why, because it was slightly because of the strength and I couldn't quite find a good opportunity to have it, although it's not that strong. And also, I just kept, for whatever reason, just kept putting it off. We talk about this, where you look at beers for, you just think, well, I don't know. This beer actually came from Andy at Hydrology. And it's from St. Mars of the Desert, who I know a lot of people like.
Yeah.
I've not had loads of their stuff. I remember having it a while ago and I thought it was fine without being mind-blowing. But again, we've said this before, revisit a brewery and you can find things are very different. So the beer I've had is Demelicht, which is a dark lager, and it weighed in at 6.3%, so it wasn't that strong.
For those who don't know much about St. Mars of the Desert, they do these different styles of beers, don't they? They're not just hazy juice bombs, there's all sorts going on.
Exactly, and this makes me think I should try a bit more of their stuff, because this was... So Demelicht means twilight in German, and it's a dark beer, it's a Schwarzbock, or strong black lager. Now, I like black lagers, I love bocks. This could have been a bock. This could have been 8% easily. So good for a dark lager. It's not a style you get that many of over here. It's definitely more of a European, certainly a German tradition. But this was so nice. Well, it was really full. It was caramelly. It wasn't bitter at all.
Isn't it interesting how we're not really talking about big yellow beers very much at the moment? Things seem to be changing slowly away from that, maybe. And because my beer is also not a big yellow beer, it's a big brown beer, and this is a 13% imperial stout, which I actually only had a taster of. Even a taster was enough to know that it was really good. And the reason I only had a taster is because somehow I ended up driving to the pub on a Saturday night, which is rare for me, as you know, isn't it?
Unheard of scenes.
Yeah, it was. So I thought, well, I'm gonna I said to Lisa, where do you want to go? And she wanted to go out for a couple of cocktails. Anyway, we had a cocktail. Then we ended up in the Thornbridge pub in Birmingham, the Colmore. I said, yeah, you drink what you want. I'll drive. So she got herself a 13% stout, amongst other things. And it was called Laminar Flow. And it was a collab between Thornbridge and Shiny in Derbyshire, another Derbyshire brewery. I don't really associate Shiny with doing big stouts, but I think it was actually brewed at their base rather than at Thornbridge's. It was spent 8 months in first fill bourbon barrels, and I feel as though that 8 months was just a nice amount of time. For it was a first fill barrel, so presumably first time you're using it, you don't want it in there for that long. And it wasn't overpowering, you know, like some of those barrel aged ones that sort of knock your block off, they're so strong. This was nice. It was the bourbon was quite subtle, actually. Chocolate, dark fruit, roasted malt, it was all in there, and it was just lovely. And that was Laminar Flow from Shiny and Thornbridge.
This is Daft About Craft.
Well, it's time now for our regular guest on the podcast. Sam from the Copper Beach Brewing Company in Worcestershire is here right in front of me. How are you, Sam?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. Now, I asked you what you're going to talk about briefly, and you said, oh, I think I'm going to do this, but it's a bit depressing. But I don't mind depressing, because I sometimes think that this industry can get glamorised a little bit. Not by the people in it, but by people looking into it, thinking, oh, yeah, it must be great brewing all these beers and going out and trying all these beers and stuff, and it's all fun. And
yeah, I mean, I think it goes without saying that in a world of social media, we all put our best foot forward, don't we? Most of the time. You can allow moments of vulnerability, but no one tells the whole truth 100% of the time. Optics can be very different to how things really, truly are. With most people, I think that can be said. So.
Yeah, I mean, you've only got to look at Facebook. People looking all happy and jolly, and you know for a fact that they're not like that at all.
Yeah, so I did have a funny story once that someone told me they'd just got back off a holiday with a couple who had rowed the whole time and had a really awful time and really ruined the holiday, and then she logged onto Facebook that morning, they'd updated their status, their profile picture of a picture of them kissing on the beach.
I've heard similar stuff. It's nuts, isn't it?
So, you know, yeah, we do that. We do feel the need to create this sort of outlook that is very positive and happy and upbeat.
I do think these days more and more, though, that the people who get the most interest in their lives through social media and stuff are those who do tell the truth, actually.
Well, I think because let's face it, the most relatable thing about life is having a tough time, because yeah, most of us do at one point or another. And it doesn't, you know, it's not all the time for most people, which is lucky, but it does become more relatable. And because that type of content and that type of discussion cuts through the noise of people being made to feel kind of bad about themselves and their lives through what people are portraying on social media. Yeah. And, you know, we've always tried to be part of that open, honest conversation, particularly surrounding mental health, because for anyone who doesn't know, that's kind of how the company came about, because Dan does suffer with anxiety and depression, and brewing was really like his way of escaping everyday life.
So it's quite an interesting point, actually. Has he escaped it by brewing? Has he escaped that trap he was in, that mental health trap?
No, absolutely not.
Is it better or worse now?
I would say it's better in some ways, because if you'd have known Dan circa 10, 15 years ago, he very much struggled socially. That was the main source of his anxiety, was surrounding social situations, right, being around people that he doesn't particularly know, fear of judgment, which again, I think a lot of people can relate to. When you look at him now, because he's kind of been forced into an industry where you have to network, you have to get to know people, you have to put yourself out there, and he has done so incredibly well on that front. It is like looking at a different person sometimes.
I met him in the pub the other day for a drink, and he was there before me, and he was saying how, going back a few years, there is no way he'd have walked into a pub on his own.
Absolutely no way.
Got a drink and sat on his own.
Waiting for someone. No way. He would have been in the car park. He would have been hanging around outside. You know, he'd have to know that you were in there. So yeah, he's come a long way in a lot of respects. But mental health doesn't ever really leave you. I think once you suffer with it, you can improve, obviously. And there are lots and lots of ways that you can do that with help or without, you know, just using resources and things. But I think if you've just got that kind of brain, there will always be things in your life that will allow it to resurface.
And also the beer industry, because it is so turbulent, especially at the moment, and so up and down, and there are so many variables involved in it, you can never really switch off. So your brain is always active thinking of things, and that can't be great for mental health.
Yeah, definitely. There is no quiet mind time to be had when you are a business owner. And I'm sure that is true of every business owner. Put it into a bit more context with like being in the thick of it, as I've just said to you before we started recording, that's kind of what I wanted to talk about. The way your life changes and pivots at times. Before we started the business, we both had really well-paid, reliable jobs. I worked for a salon, earned a really decent wage. I was a manager. Dan was in a well-paid job as well, though he didn't enjoy it quite as much as I enjoy my job. Then the pandemic hit, and it was he lost his job. I was on furlough. We were thrown into this completely different situation, which is obviously when the business did come about. And then obviously we were pregnant with Delilah, our daughter. And whilst I was on maternity leave, the business I worked for shut down. So I kind of was forced into self-employment as well. So then we ended up in this situation where we're both self-employed, but I can no longer work full-time and Dan can no longer work full-time because we have our daughter to take care of as well in the midst of this. Can't afford childcare. That's a whole separate issue we won't go into,
but that is a
really big issue. And every spare minute we have is taken up by both of our businesses and our child and all of the different things that come with those things. Plus, we unfortunately weren't best blessed with a great sleeper. So a lot of the time I'm running on a lot less sleep than I'm used to. So when you do have the time, you don't have the energy. And when you have the energy, you don't have the time.
It's like this awful vicious circle, isn't it?
And proper catch-22 situation.
And you think, when is this ever going to end?
Yeah. And then curveballs get thrown your way all the time. Some of them are positive. Some of them aren't so positive.
There's huge highs and lows to deal with all the time, aren't there? I guess in every industry, but we're talking about the beer industry in particular. And yeah, I mean, I see Dan and, you know, he can be up here one minute and down here the next, depending on things that have happened.
Exactly. And the highs don't seem to last very long. It's a little bit like a drug addiction. You know, you get the high, it's very temporary. And then coming crashing down is often a lot worse. But yeah, like I said, I didn't want to sit here and make this like a really depressing listen.
No, it's interesting to get. That's one of the things we get from you. We get a true insight. That's why we love you to be on the podcast, because we get a different insight, a sort of snapshot into real life, as it were, not what social media might show us.
And I think a situation happened recently where I can't really go into that specific, like the specifics of it, but it kind of made us realise that the optics of what we're doing maybe look like we're doing a lot better than we are.
I think that's the case with a lot of breweries, to be honest. You can make a brewery look very successful from the outside quite easily, I think. Often we have people on and we think, oh yeah, they've got a massive brewery and it's all going great guns. Mm. And
2 minutes later they're in administration. And it's not that we're not doing well from the point of view of we're getting the product out there, people are enjoying it. The amount of work that is having to go into getting it where it is at the moment is so difficult to sustain. I think that's our issue. And sort of financially, you know, anyone who has a business will say the same. The amount of hours that you put in and the amount of money that you get paid, you know, you would not work for that under employment.
I heard something really interesting the other day, and the person who said this will be listening to this and he'll know it's him, but I won't say who it is. He said, I run this brewery and don't make a great deal from it. I'd have been better off going to work for a year or 2 years for free for another brewery, getting that experience under my belt, because I'd have been no worse off.
Isn't that true?
And how interesting is that?
I know. Yeah. And that's the thing, isn't it? You take these gambles and you have to just go for it. Well, it's like hindsight is always 20/20, isn't it? You look back and think, would there have been an easier way to do this? But you can never know the choices that you make. No. You can never know if the path you took is better or worse than the other one that you could have taken, you know?
Yeah.
You can never know.
You've just got to get on and do it, which is exactly what you and Dan are doing, isn't it?
Yeah. It is what we're doing and it's what we'll continue to do. But yeah, I just wanted to take that moment to be vulnerable and say, this is really hard.
And I think it's something that a lot of people listening to this, not brewers, but just casual listeners, will be quite surprised to hear that, because it's not something they hear talked about very much.
Yeah, maybe. Like I said, we all want to put our best foot forward and look like we're doing really well and look like we're really happy and positive all the time. And I am an incredibly positive person, or I try to be at least. So it's hard sometimes to let that negativity sink in and feel it, because I don't want to. And I think, again, that's something that most of us kind of push things to one side, because that's the more difficult thing to face. If things don't feel very good, it's easier to ignore it than it is to kind of, let it in and feel it. I'm in a very kind of reflective place at the moment.
This is very reflective.
It is, isn't it?
It's fascinating. It really is. I love these sort of insights. It is interesting. It's got something fun coming up this weekend anyway, haven't you?
Oh, have we? What's going on?
I think it's this weekend, isn't it?
Oh, it's Dan's birthday on Saturday.
Yeah, that's what I meant, yeah. Did you forget?
Yeah, it is. It's Dan's birthday and we're actually having our first day out together since our daughter was born, which was 2 years ago, just over 2 years ago. So we haven't actually spent any time together because of everything I've just talked about.
Yeah,
exactly, you know?
Exactly. So, yeah.
So this is actually quite a momentous weekend. Yeah, it is, yeah. I can't believe I forgot about it. Yeah.
What are the odds you start an argument? Somebody starts an argument.
I'd say it's pretty high, yeah, to be honest. But, you know, we'll see how we go. We're headed off to Bristol to check out a few crafty beer places. We're getting the train so we can both have a little tipple. And, yeah, we're spending a full day together. So we'll see how far we get without ripping each other's heads off.
Yeah, well, the next time you're on our next episode, we'll be fascinating.
I will tell you all about it.
Tell us all about
it. As much honesty as I've offered today.
Yeah, we want that same level of honesty.
So be on your best behaviour, Dan Lawson.
Absolutely. Well, thanks very much, Sam. That was really, really fascinating. And enjoy your time in Bristol.
Thank you for the free therapy session.
That's right. Anytime. Right. Well, we've been enjoying some lovely beers on the podcast. We started off with our Brew to Me, where I had Cold Town and Dave had Many Hands. We had a lovely couple of beers from Gruff. Now we're on to the very final part of the podcast.
And now it's time for Hype or Tripe.
And usually when we ask this question, it's, is this beer hype or tripe? This time it's slightly different, because it's not a beer, it's a brewery. When you look at it, when you say it like that, it's a bit stark, isn't it, Dave? Like, is this brewery hype or tripe? But bear with us.
Yeah, so this brewery has been in existence of actually putting beers out into the mass market for less than 2 months.
They appear to have really hit the ground running, because if you search for Dark Element, you'll find a lot of bottle shops nationwide are stocking their beers. They're everywhere.
That's really stark that they are on a lot of the big places straight away. So that's kudos to them getting the name out there, and also, you know, obviously these places wanting to stock it. So of course we noticed, because, well, you certainly noticed, because you notice things like this all the time. And
yeah, I just get far too excited when I see a brewery like that, and I think, oh, who's this? Got to find out more.
So we did, and the man behind Dark Element is Tom Kendall, and Tom and I have had a lot of conversations over the last few weeks. He's very kindly sent us some beers. We bonded over the fact that we both have very young boys, and both were feeling ill at various points during our conversation, so that's been a nice bit of common ground, as well as the love of craft beer. So as I say, Tom very kindly sent us the four beers that he has out at the moment. There are more beers coming out soon.
There's a lot more very soon, aren't there?
Exactly. As you can imagine, getting your own brewery up and running, as we've found, is no easy process. But to be doing what he's doing as a one-man band, you know, we've had WhatsApp conversations where he's out doing deliveries and then he's brewing. And, you know, I don't know really how he sleeps or does anything else, but he's been very, very busy. So a voice note of introducing himself wasn't quite possible, but he has written me a message. So he not only tells us a little bit about himself, but also about the beers that we'll be trying. And hopefully in the future, we'll get him on for a proper talk and find out just how his 24 is progressing.
So I believe he came from Brewmonster in South Wales. That's it. That's where his background is.
Dark Element, based in South Wales. And which is interesting. It feels like suddenly Wales has become a bit of a hotspot of where we're finding breweries. But anyway, based down in South Wales. And funny enough, we were talking about tried and tested, saying we're not talking about big yellow beers at the moment. Well,
we are now.
Yes, because this is what Tom likes to brew. Modern IPAs using modern hops, as we'll find out a bit more in a minute. But
I do bang on about this quite a lot, you know, yellow beer this, yellow beer. And it's fine. You know, they're very popular. If you can make good yellow beers, great. I don't have a problem with that at all. It's just that sometimes I think there's a lot of them around. But if you can make yours stand out from all the others, that's the key, isn't it?
Exactly. That's it. If you can make yourself stand out from the crowd in what is the most saturated part of the craft beer market, then you must be doing something right. So what have you got?
Right, well, I have got 4.5% extra pale ale called Headlights, which is Nectaron, and I love Nectaron, and Citra hops involved here.
Okay, and while you're sampling that...
I'm loving the colour. It's awesome.
Yeah, it looks... quite, actually mine's probably a little bit darker, I say, although we do know there's a bit difference on the computer screen, but I think mine's a little bit darker than yours. I have got slightly stronger Entropy IPA, and my hops are Citra, Mosaic, and my new favourite, Nelson Sauvin.
Let it go, man, let it go.
I think I've been quite restrained. I think if the shoe was on the other foot.
Do you know, this is interesting you talk about Nelson, because I had a beer the other day with just Nelson on its own, Nelson Sauvin on its own, no other hops, and God, it's pungent.
Yes, it's quite a dank hop, isn't it?
Very much. Lisa said it was like a sweaty sot in a school PE changing room, and I think she's probably quite right, actually.
It's almost like there's the initial flurry of excitement, then it all goes down and everything comes back. Nelson Sauvin was very popular for a time, and then it seemed to die off a bit and just got used in, as complimentary. And now all of a sudden it seems you've sort of just had a single hop, and there's sort of two hop beers or type thing where it's... Yeah. You know, really starting to play a major role.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether it should play the starring role every time. I think it needs a bit of backup personally, because it's quite intense on its own. But you've got it there with, what was it, Citra and...
Mosaic, so the classic combo.
Yeah.
Well, talk about sweaty socks. Mine isn't sweaty socks, but I can smell that Nelson Sauvin, because there is that sort of danky...
It is a real dankness, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a danky, slightly weedy smell to it.
Yeah, that's it. I hate that word, dank. I really do. I think it's one of those words that gets used a lot in craft beer that other people think, what are you on about? What, dank? What's that?
But dank is sweaty socks and a bit musty and a bit...
Yeah, a little bit earthy, sweaty, just...
And this sounds horrible, but heading towards that slightly sort of sharp BO-y smell without quite getting there.
Yeah, why ever you'd want to drink that in a beer, when you say it like that, God knows.
I know,
But anyway, with the backup of Citra and Mosaic, what's this tasting like?
Okay, so it's very soft, would be the first thing I'd say. Very full.
Yeah.
The Mosaic's really subdued, I would say. I get a bit of Citra, and then I get Nelson Sauvin, so I get sort of white winey, a little bit danky, a little bit sort of sharp. Really well balanced, and yeah. Really nice beer.
That's a theme that runs through the beer that I'm drinking as well. So soft. Pillowy soft, they all say, don't they?
They do.
I think we should start our own lexicon. You know, we should come up with new words.
I think we do. Yeah, we do try to, rather than use that. They're not quite cliches, but they are cliches within the circle of sort of, you know, how they're described, aren't they?
You know, like in sports interviews, you always hear cliches, don't you?
Well, yes.
Beer is a bit like that, isn't it, when you're talking about it, really?
Yeah.
We need to come up with some new words. But if you're listening to this and you think, oh, I've got a word they never use, let us know and we'll weave it into a future episode. But anyway, this is pillowy soft and really, really smooth, beautifully well balanced. Now, Nectaron is quite pungent sometimes, Nectaron, a bit like Galaxy. In fact, I've confused it with Galaxy before. It's a quite in-your-face kind of hop, but it's been dealt with really well here. The Citra backing it up, it's a lovely mix, it really is. So you get an initial big fruity hit, and oh, it's lovely. It's very, very drinkable, that is. There was a little flurry of Nectaron beers around, and then it seems to have died off a bit, but I do like it. It reminds me of Galaxy, but it's not as pungent as Galaxy. Look, if you like a bright, fruity, hazy pale, I think that's what we've both got here. Two different beers, 4.5% I've got, you've got a 6.5%. Tastes awesome. They remind me, or this reminds me, of your Nothing Bounds, your Glasshouse.
It does. The other brewery it reminds me of, and that's only because I had one of their beers for the first time in ages when I was out recently. It's Polly's. I haven't had a Polly's in a long, long time, and it compares very favourably to some of their sort of nice, full, soft beers. But as I said, we were going to hear from Tom to explain a bit more about Dark Element. And
I completely get how he's so bogged down. When you're getting things off the ground, and he, like we said, he's hit the ground running, you know, you barely have 2 seconds to stop and breathe. So thanks, Tom, for taking the time to write something to Dave. And well, what's he written to you, Dave? That's what we all want to know.
So he says, hi guys, Tom here, the director and brewer for the new South Wales-based brewery Dark Element Brew Co. We officially launched on the 12th of January this year.
That is nuts. Literally 6 weeks ago.
It's mad, isn't it? And have had amazing feedback in the short time we've been trading. We primarily brew hazy hoppy pails and IPAs using modern hops, as showcased in the beers of Centova. Headlights, which is one you've had, Dave, is coming in at a low 4.5%, and it's showcased New Zealand powerhouse hop Nectaron, giving the beer an intense tropical hit. I wanted to have this beer punch above its ABV, so trying to get that thicker, juicy body and mouthfeel was really important to have it impact like a tropical IPA. Would you concur?
Absolutely spot on, yeah. You know, like sometimes you have a beer and you're like, yeah, that ticks every box. It's hard to be critical of it in any way, really. I'd got both cans out of the fridge and I just want to open the other one in a minute, which is high praise indeed, isn't it?
And then he says of the beer, I'm enjoying Entropy. He says, second beer, Entropy comes in at 6.5% with a mix of Mosaic Citra and Nelson Sauvin. Big tropical sweetness up front. Yes, I would agree with that. And the Nelson Sauvin grape notes come through on the finish. Yep, completely agree with that. Hope you enjoy the beers, which we most definitely are.
Right, so this is, for me, undoubtedly a brewery to watch for in 2024. There is no doubt in my mind. If you haven't heard of Dark Elements, you have now, and you're going to be hearing a lot more if these beers are anything to go by.
I think Tom and his beers are going to get mentioned very quickly in the same breath as all the people you said. I mentioned Polly's while I've been drinking this, the other brewery I've thought of. I remember having their first beer I had from them, and it was similar kind of thing, Rivington.
Yep.
This could be very big here for Tom. Like, God knows how he's going to get through all the work. But
good luck, Tom. Yeah. Good luck meeting the demand. Tremendous. That is really nice. That is really enjoyable. Having spoken about Big Yellow beers disparagingly earlier, if they all tasted like that, I wouldn't mind.
I think, to be fair, they probably did for a time. It's like anything. It's when beers are just being put out for beer's sake, when there's actually a bit of thought going into it and a bit of attention to detail, they stand out now.
This is the thing, right? So we've both got essentially pale ales here, but from what we've both said, they're quite different.
Mm.
And it's when they all start tasting the same that annoys me. I'm sort of thinking, well, why should I have this one and not this one? Because it's all very similar. But, you know, the hop bill here for these two different beers is... these two beers, it is quite different and they taste very different.
Yeah.
So though I'm really excited. Did you say he's got four new beers in the offing soon?
It's what he suggested, that there's four more new beers coming out in the next few weeks. So keep your eyes peeled. You know, they should be everywhere.
Well, there we are. We've come to the end of another episode of Daft About Craft. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to myself and Dave talk all things beer. We'll be back again later this month. It's a busy old month, is March. You can find us with episode number 58 due out on the 25th of March, when we'll be back with loads more craft beer goodies for you. So we'll see you then.
Daft About Craft, the Craft Beer Podcast.